Coming up on the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show,
we're going to talk about controlling your weeds now and how to plan for next spring,
as well as preserving your harvest, whether from the farmer's market or your own backyard, without canning.
And we're going to talk to author Rhonda Fleming Hayes all about pollinators,
as well as your garden questions and our garden answers. Garden Radio is on the air, and it starts right now.
You're tuned in to the only vegetable gardening radio show in Milwaukee, with your host, Joey Baird, who grew up in the country but now lives closer to the city, and Holly Baird, who has always been a city girl. Combined, they have over 25 years of gardening experience, who believe in simple gardening practices. A gardener for all gardeners, founders of the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, where they created over 800 how-to garden videos to teach others how to grow more of what they eat. Join them for the next hour as they discuss vegetable gardening and more.
It is the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show on 860 AM WNOV and W293CX 106.5. Wherever you may be listening, however you may be listening, whether through the simple radio app, the TuneIn app, or anywhere in between, I am your host, Joy Baird. Beside me is my wife, co-host, best friend, and gardening partner,
Holly Baird.
The WisconsinVegetableGardener.com now contains over 1,000 garden videos, short and long format, fun and educational, all to help you grow more. You also can find Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and a whole lot more there, all that stuff, live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We're so happy you've joined us on this Saturday morning to talk gardening. And we're able to do that each Saturday morning because of great companies you'll hear throughout the program, as well as...
Nasala Kombucha is the executive sponsor of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. Nasala is made in Wisconsin with your local tea and natural herbs. Look for it in the refrigerator aisle at your local grocer. If you don't see it, ask for it. Because if it's not Nasala Kombucha, it's not kombucha. You can find out more at nasala.com.
And you can contact us throughout the program, even after the program. You can simply send us an email at twvgradio@gmail.com anytime throughout the week. Or you can go on Twitter and hashtag us at #TWVG. Ask us a question, give us a comment. If you have a question trying to identify a situation or problem, provide a photograph. It makes our identification of that situation a whole lot easier. But if you got a question during the show here, you can do that, and you can call into the Ivy Organics 3-in-1 Plant Guard Hotline.
Ivy Organic 3-in-1 Plant Guard naturally protects plants against damaging sunburn, insects, and rodents, protects newly installed plants and trees, shields pruned and damaged surfaces for use on your roses, fruit, and nut trees, ornamental trees, and shrubs. This product is non-toxic, environmentally safe, and organic. For more information, you can visit Ivy Organics. .com. You can call them to 414-444-5250.
You can do that at any time. You don't have to wait till the last 10 minutes of the program. We were at the Germantown Public Library this past Tuesday, was it?
Yeah, it was Tuesday.
Where Holly did her Basics of Canning talk presentation. I don't know what quite terminology you want to describe the event as. Had a great turnout, and we have now those people listening to our program, and we want to welcome those individuals. We don't have any additional talks until about the second week in September, where we're going to do some growing great garlic, as well as the more basics of canning, and I think we got four or five more presentations lined up, and that will wrap up the season for us. Well, I'm not going to talk about the eclipse this past week because we've all been talked out of it, but I did want to, you know, say something about what I saw on Facebook, and we all see a lot of things. We see a lot of things in the news, and sometimes whether you think the country's going good, whether you think the country's going bad, there is a certain perception that the news elevates certain stories to get better ratings, and we see a lot of bad things of people hating each other, and it's not everybody. It's a small group that makes everybody else look bad. But there was a post on Facebook this past week after the eclipse, and I don't know who posted it or where it was from, but I saw it, and the post stated, "For a moment today, America looked up at the sky and forgot about hate." And I thought that was a very appropriate statement that was made. So,
but just off of that, I want to say that whether or not it's a small group of people contributing to the hate, it's still not right.
No, it's not right at all.
So,
but it's just like a drop of oil in water makes it look like a lot worse than what it is. But yeah, hate is hate no matter if it's two people or 2,000 people. That's the main point of that, yeah. So with that being said, let's talk about something that's positive that we can all get together and work as a unity, whether no matter who you are or where you're from, and that's gardening. And we're going to talk about ways you can control your weeds, whether now in the garden or get a jump start on them in the spring next year. Now, weeds are something many people choose do not like.
And we get a lot of questions about it. What's the best way to control weeds? How can I, how can I prevent weeds? What can be done to have less weeds next year? I did this year. What happens next year with my weeds? So it's definitely a very popular topic.
Now, when you're going to get the most amount of weeds if you're going in the traditional ground. You're going to get not as many weeds if you have raised beds. You're going to even have fewer weeds if you have containers. So keep that in mind. The ground garden is obviously the most efficient or economical way to go because you don't have to bring in a lot of material. Raised beds, you have to bring in the material to make the bed, the compost to fill the bed. Containers, you have to buy the containers, you have to fill them up with something. So you can kind of look at the different avenues in which work best for you in your particular situation. Now, number one, the best way to control weeds, whether you like it or not, is chemical application. Big farmers do this all the time. Some backyard gardeners use this all the time. It's the chemicals that have the glyphosate. Is it
glyphosate? Glyphosate, also known as Roundup.
Yeah.
And what that does is it's not only bad for the your soil, because basically, yes, it kills the weeds, but it also kills the good things in your soil as well. Another thing is that it's water soluble, which means that it's going to hold on to those water molecules and continue to travel. It doesn't just go away. Another bad thing about it, well, glyphosate, is that if you don't spray it at the right temperature, if you spray it when it's above 70 degrees out, some will apply to those weeds, to those plants, but a lot of it will hang in the air, and that's bad as well.
So that is an application in which you can get rid of weeds. I'm just going to lay all of them out here, and you can decide what's going to be best for your situation. There are called organic sprays, organic weed killers. Now, one of the main components of those sprays are citrus oils that lay on the plant and suffocate the plant so it doesn't allow it to get photosynthesis from the sun. So that's another way that you can do it. And there's a lot of those good companies out there, and it's healthy for the whole environment and the whole deal. Let's go to the Ivy Organics 3-in-1 Plant Guard Hotline where we have a question or comment. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Quick question.
Yes.
I have something worse than weeds because I chose to garden this year in pots. So I'm controlling the weeds by growing my tomatoes and peppers in pots, but I can't get rid of the pesky squirrels.
The squirrels?
Who have since eaten up my grape tomatoes.
Well, there's a couple of different ways in which you can do. One is removal of the animal, but you might be in a place where you don't want to kill the animal. Secondly, if you have chili powder, sprinkle that around the base of the plant. That's the most economical way to go. And what that chili powder will do will be ingested in the nostrils of the squirrel or other animals that are trying to eat your plants, and they will go elsewhere because that burns them. You can also spray Bob-X, which is one of the sponsors. They apply that around the base of the container, not actually in the soil. So that's another way you can do it. Also, if you can basically incorporate the plants into a cage on your porch, patio, or deck to allow them not to get inside and eat your cherry tomatoes and peppers. That's a third or fourth way to go about doing it as well.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I hope that helps, and good luck with your battle with the squirrels there. So that's one way to get rid of pests in the garden. Extract them, remove them, or you can actually use chemicals or organic chemicals, essentially, to get rid of or deter animals from eating what you're trying to grow.
Well, city people are not going to be out there shooting squirrels, so definitely.
I'm not going to say they aren't, and I'm not going to say they are. That's their prerogative.
But do it at 3 a.m. when your neighbors are asleep is none of our business.
Yes.
So anyway.
Organic sprays. That's a great way. Now the organic, I want to put a disclaimer here. The organic sprays, you may have to apply a couple of times because it's not as potent as that other chemical that will kill the weeds. You can also do a couple of ways you can use, you can kill them with heat. There are companies, and I'll just throw it out there now. There are companies out there, flameengineering.com. They are going to be a sponsor next year. They've already committed to jumping on the program. They have a number of large as well as small torches that you hook up a propane tank for, to a 1 pound tank or larger, and you just hit the plant with heat. You're not frying it, you're not burning it to the ground, you're just simply hitting it with that intense heat, and it breaks up the cell molecules in the plant and it kills the plant.
Right, so if you do this, you want to obviously be safe about it to prevent a possible large fire. But that is a good thing. I do like this, this, we have done this as well, is basically you're solarizing your bed. And so what you would want to do is you want to kind of cut down the weeds that are there. So if this is, say, like, for example, you're done with one area of your garden, like, I'm done for the year, I'm not going to use it again until next spring, what you would do is you would take, cut down whatever weeds are there, plants are there, and then you take plastic, and you just cover that area, and it's going to smother those weeds out.
You want to mat that plastic down on the edges.
Mat it down. Don't just, like, lay it on top, but make sure it's flat to the ground.
4 to 6 weeks if it's really warm. Otherwise, I would leave it on there probably all through winter. You're going to kill a lot of the microbial life, but once you remove it in the spring and add water to it, a lot of that microbial life will migrate back into that area that has been scorched or oven baked under that black plastic. And what you're doing is you're killing the plants that are there now, as well as you're creating such an environment in which the seeds that are still viable reach a temperature in which it kills the viability of those seeds, so you lessen the amount of weeds that are going to germinate next spring when the plastic gets removed.
And you can do this at any time. Say next spring you're done planting and you're like, oh, I still have this room left, I'm not going to use it, or you pull your garlic out or something. You can do that any time.
And also now, the most, what many of us are familiar with is just extracting, removing the weeds, getting our hands and knees, pulling the weeds out. And we want to remove the roots in its entirety, because 99% of these plants, even probably more than that, are propagated by root follicles. So if you just rip the plant out and you leave the roots in the ground, one, the plant may regrow out of that stalk or that root ball system that once that you removed, the top portion, or two, if you chop up or just leave particles of roots in the ground, those will regrow into multiple new plants. So you want to get as many, it's impossible to get all the roots out. I understand that. But trying to get as much out as possible. After a nice rain, these things come out very, very easily. And you can remove them. And you want to remove them prior to them going to seed, putting more seeds in the ground. We have failed miserably at that. There are plants, there's weeds in our garden that have gone to seed now that are going to be problems in the years to come. That's just the way life is with garden. We're not perfect. It's not a PBS show that it's in our backyard. Everything. We still have the same problems that you have with weeds. We're just telling you some of the things that we've done that's worked for us and some of our failures along the way as well. Another thing is we can do with our weed, or get rid of our weeds.
This is interesting, is corn gluten. So corn gluten is a byproduct of processing corn into cornmeal, so it stops seeds becoming fully grown weeds. So it wouldn't harm anything else, but you would do this. You would sprinkle this around your plants once those plants are established.
Now, we've never done that. Now, I'm familiar with corn gluten from back on the farm. It was a product that we bought from the breweries in the St. Louis area. They extracted the goodness out of the corn, made it into pellet form, and then we used it in a supplemented into cattle feed.
Oh, okay.
That's where I'm familiar with corn gluten.
I guess if you wanted to find corn gluten, maybe you'd have to go to, like, a feed store.
Where I would start with, and they could direct you if they don't have that.
But then you kind of basically mulch around your plants. And with that being said, mulch is another good idea to help suppress weeds.
Mulch, chemical-free, seed-free grass clippings, straw. You don't have to worry about 99% of the straw you get is going to have minimal seeds in it from the grain that it was harvested from. That's the stalk of the plant. Let's see, what else? Shredded paper, not that appealing, does work, as well as leaves.
Now that it's almost September, we're starting to get into fall. Think about that. If you want that mulch, those leaves, start collecting them.
Yes, we apply dozens upon dozens of gallons of trash can fulls of leaves from neighbors' yards and the driveway, our property, everything, to try to get as much in it, as many leaves in the garden as possible. And now you can't even tell that we had, if you go back on the Facebook page and the YouTube channel website, you'll see all the leaves we put in the garden. You can't even tell we did anything because they have broke down. Are we missing anything of the obvious here that we should be about weeds?
No, I don't think so. I think we covered basically everything there.
And there's a lot of other ways in which you can utilize the getting the weeds out. But if you can get them out when they're young, it's a lot easier than when they're 7 foot tall. So you can get them out now, and then also hopefully that will help you in the spring as well. When we come back, Holly's going to take over and talk about multiple ways in which we can preserve our harvest without actually having to can them right after this.
Have a gardening question? Email Joey and Holly at twvgradio@gmail.com.
Garden seeds do not have to cost a fortune. Just 99 cents at migardener.com. With over 300 varieties of non-GMO, heirloom and organic flower, vegetable, and herb seeds available year-round, pay less and get more seeds. Shipping as low as $2.50. That just makes sense. Go to migardener.com for seeds and gardening needs, tools, and special blend fertilizer. migardener.com. It's that simple. Family owned and operated. Do you have a problem with deer or small herbivores eating your vegetation? There is a natural solution that is safe for your pets and family. Bobex is the answer, an environmentally friendly solution to protect your plants, will not wash off, and is guaranteed. Bobex Deer was independently tested against 9 known competitors and rated 93% effective, second only to a physical barrier. Bobex can be used on all types of ornamentals, trees, and shrubs. Ask for it by name at your local independent garden center. Find out more, visit Bobex.com. BOBBEX.COM.
I have a growing family and I try to make healthy meals. And one thing I really love about Woodman's is that they have a huge selection of fresh fruits and vegetables. And the quality is really good too. They even carry locally grown produce. And they keep the prices low, so I can stay within my budget and put a healthy meal on the table. I'm Cameron and this is my Woodman's.
I want a garden center that listens to and understands my needs.
I want to buy my gardening products from a local business with strong ties to the community.
All I want is a garden center that truly values their customers.
It seems like everyone is selling plants these days, but I'm having a hard time finding quality.
I take pride in my garden, so I want my garden center to take pride in their products.
Where will you be going for all of your gardening needs this season? Blue Mel's Garden Center. We are your answer.
Blue Mel's, 4930 West Loomis Road, 414-282-4220.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Garden Radio Show with your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, on 860 AM WNOV and W293CX 106.5. So happy and thank you for joining us on this Saturday morning to talk about gardening. Well, another thing we can talk about is the fresh produce that is still coming up from Georgia. Fresh peaches, pecans, and then Michigan blueberries here from tree-ripe.com.
Hey, you can find out where to pick up top quality produce from tree-ripe.com. They have beautiful, tasty peaches, sweet, juicy blueberries. They come right to a stop in your neighborhood, fresh off the truck, right from the source. Super delicious. For location and schedules, you can visit tree-ripe.com. They have locations all over, including Iowa, Upper and Lower Michigan, Minnesota, Illinois, and right here in Wisconsin. Tree-ripe.com is your go-to for the freshest produce around.
Well, yeah, and you can go there, and again, we've talked about it multiple times. You got to experience it. It's just a product that is worth the money, worth the time to go get it. They appreciate you, and they appreciate the quality of produce that they produce.
Okay, so we're going to talk about preserving without canning.
Canning is a great way to preserve.
But many people don't want to do it. Maybe they don't want to put the work in. Maybe they don't want to invest the time or the money.
They don't feel safe about doing it.
So there's things you can do. People ask us, okay, how can I preserve this without canning? Or I have this, this, and this. What can I do to prolong it?
We've got a couple of ways. Now, the simplest or the easiest for the time being would be just put it in your refrigerator. But that doesn't work for everything.
No, but one thing you want to keep in mind is if you are harvesting root crops, so say that whether it be beets, carrots, pretty much any root crop, if you're going to store it in your fridge, which is fine for root crops, you want to leave the dirt on. And if you're not going to store it in your fridge, you want to leave the dirt on. That dirt kind of helps preserve it in itself.
Airtight container is the best because it's going to keep it from drying out quicker than if you just threw it on the shelf.
But like tomatoes you cannot just toss in your fridge.
You don't want, you can, but you don't want to.
Right, you don't want to.
Because it messes up the composition of internally of the tomato and it makes it taste horrible.
And that's any, I mean, that store-bought or homegrown tomatoes, you do not want to toss them in your fridge.
So you can look at, you can go through and you can find on your search engine what's best to go in the fridge and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
But what can we put in the freezer?
Sure.
Because that list is a totally different list.
Right. So you can freeze a lot of things. You can blanch them, which if you don't know what blanching means, some people call it parboiling. What you do is you take that item, you put it in boiling water, depending on what it is, for a minute to 3 minutes so that it kind of cooks a little bit. Then you put it into an ice bath and then you freeze it that way. But there's things that you don't have to blanch. So, for example, things you have to blanch, like cauliflower, you can't just toss cauliflower, broccoli into the freezer because it's gonna get mushy, but you can blanch it and put it in the freezer.
Kale, green beans.
We do our green beans in the freezer. Kale, you would blanch it for a less amount of time, but it works well in the freezer. Spinach, any greens, really. But, for example, tomatoes. Say you end up with a whole bunch of tomatoes, and you're like, I just can't can them right now. I actually had a friend on Facebook who's 9 months pregnant who just asked me this. She's like, I have all these tomatoes on my
I can't can right now.
Yeah. And I said, you can put them in a freezer bag as they are whole. You know, cut out any bad spots, but put them in a freezer bag, and then once you're ready for them, you thaw them out. And actually, it makes them really easy to peel them that way, too.
And some people will do this because it's too hot during the summer to can, so they'll freeze all of their tomatoes and then deal with this in November, December, January, so the heat actually warms the house as well.
Right. So that's a good thing. Now, zucchini, the nice thing with zucchini is because sometimes we end up with too much of it.
We always end up. It's not sometimes. It's we always end up with too much of it.
Right. So if you have a zucchini and you're like drowning in zucchini and you ran out of ideas, and if you bake one more loaf of zucchini bread for your coworkers, they're probably going to throw something at you. What you can do is you can shred it and you can freeze it. And then that way you can use it later on in whatever you want to use.
But it has to be shredded.
It has to be shredded. Now, if you wanted to freeze it sliced or cubed or whatever, you would have to blanch it.
What's the best way of shredding zucchini in order to...
Just like your food processor.
Okay, so you just want to kind of coarsely grind it. Okay, mm-hmm. So it's not just...
Or you can just get out the good old shredder, shred it that way too.
So it's got to be in that small particle format. Okay. And that way you can just pull it out, and then it should be as good or...
Right, you're not going to want to eat it fresh, but it's fine for baking, cooking, whatever, toss it in some smoothies, whatever you're going to do with it.
Well, let's go with a bucket of sand. Now, this is something that the old-timers used to do, and back in the old times, they had root cellars, too.
I wanted to explain this, old-timer.
Okay, bucket of sand, you would take, and this works well for root crops. Let's say turnips, rutabagas, carrots, those type of items. You would bury it in a bucket of sand. You cut the tops off and then layer them in sand and put them in the basement or a cool area in your house. What that is going to allow the plants to do is it mimics actually being underground. You also can do this with soil. For example, if you're going to harvest Jerusalem artichokes, that's a crop that you don't see in stores very often because the longevity of life after harvest is minimal to a couple of days. So we'll harvest a whole bunch in the fall and we'll layer it in a 5-gallon bucket with soil, artichokes, and then we'll put it in the stairwell of our attic during the winter, and then we can remove and harvest as we need. You can do the same thing with carrots. You can use sand or you can use soil. The sand, it's a little easier because you want to keep the soil, the sand damp, not wet, damp, so the items do not get moisture extracted out of them from the sand. Soil or compost, you don't have to keep it moist or muddy. It will work relatively balanced in the layering of the soil, artichokes, turnips, rutabagas, whatever the case is. You can also, and I don't think many people have this available anymore or know what they are, is root cellars. This is the way 50, 80 years ago that you would just harvest everything and bring it underground, and it was very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much like a basement, because basements, even the rarest of basements that are not climate control, are not nearly as cool as a root cellar. But you can go online and look at some of the phenomenal pictures of root cellars and how they held their produce for months on end. Just keeping things in a cool, dark area of your house, pumpkins, spaghetti squash, butternut squash, a lot of the winter squashes we will keep and have kept for over a year.
But you have to keep it in a cool area, and you have to keep it away from direct sunlight. If you're keeping it, you know, near your heater or your heat register, it's not going to be good.
Now, keep in mind, if you're keeping butternut or spaghetti or pumpkins in the house, in the corner, and the longer you let it set, the drier it becomes. It is still edible, but it does lose its moisture content throughout that year process. You really want to use it up in about 6 months at most. But we've had pumpkins that has been a year and is still good, but again, it's not as great as if you use it sooner.
Right. So that is the whole, like, temperature-controlled preserving. So then there's fermentation, which we spoke about
a couple weeks ago.
And we're going to have a woman, Jane Campbell. When is she going to be on? A couple weeks. Yeah. Does a lot of fermentation as well.
Briefly, for those who maybe missed that, what is a fermentation process, and the definition of it?
So basically, you're using the good bacteria to change the chemical component of the food so that you're introducing probiotics to it, but it's also a way to preserve food as well.
And you do this in a jar or a crock or even a bucket. Mm-hmm. You can do this in. And then let's talk about dehydration. Dehydration is a way in which you can extract the moisture out of the fruit or vegetable or green and put it to a state of percentage of moisture in it that is shelf stable.
Yes. So we're going to do that with our tomatoes. Essentially, we're going to make sun-dried tomatoes, but not with sun-drying, where you use the dehydrator. But that is a way to you can do a lot of things dehydrated. People dehydrate their carrots, say, for soups, onions, whatever. We've made our own onion powder, garlic powder. So those are things that you can dehydrate, and not necessarily food storage, but it is a food storage in a way, because you're using the item that you've grown, and herbs too. You can do that way.
Now, there's two types of dehydrators. Basically, there's two types. There's air forced heat through the unit, and there is just coils heat where it just naturally raises up through the produce or the fruit that you're trying to dry. I would highly recommend, if you're going to invest in a dehydrator, get the fan driven dehydrator where it's pushing the air, the heat, through the fruit, because it dries 100 times quicker than the coil natural air going up through the fruit.
And if you're looking for a dehydrator, you can usually find them at rubber sales. That's where we found ours, and it's very often easily found there.
And you can spend $50, and we're talking new here, $50 to $60 on a dehydrator, or $500 to $800 on a dehydrator. It depends on what level of you're wanting to dehydrate. Big, small, industrial, commercial, home, it doesn't matter. There's a lot of different levels of dehydrators in it. So there's just a number of ways in which you don't have to go get a canner and a bunch of canning jars to preserve your harvest. You can do this in a variety of different ways to get some longevity out of what you're harvesting now or buying at the farmer's market. Well, we're still cutting grass, but maybe you're not ready for a new mower quite yet. But now's a good time that you can start looking at what will make your yard and your job of cutting grass easier for next year.
Do you hear that? That's your neighbor shaking in their grass-stained shoes, because Aaron's is about to help you step up your grass-cutting game. Your name is on the mailbox, so Aaron's name should be on your mower. Heavy-duty steel construction, smarter, smoother controls, professional cutting performance. The only thing we love more than the smell of freshly cut grass is the sweet taste of victory. Aaron's, it comes down to this. Visit Aaron's.com to find your local dealer for lawn and snow removal equipment.
Well, when we come back, Rhonda Fleming Hayes will be with us. She's an author and passionate gardener about pollinators. We're going to talk all about how to make that happen, get the pollinators in your yard, your garden, and to keep them there right after this.
Tweet Joey and Holly using hashtag TWVG.
Oh, yeah. What you say? You say Nasala Kombucha. It'll put some glide in your stride and some pep in your step. Nasala Kombucha. Yeah.
Nasala Kombucha makes your body happy. Nasala Kombucha makes your body smile.
Hatcha Milk, 125 years of experience producing stone ground organic flour and cornmeal made from premium quality whole grains. Family owned company. Continual standards that are non-GMO, organic at the highest safety levels. Offering a wide variety of flours, pasta, baking mixes, flaxseed, and more. Even kosher and gluten-free options. Found at most local grocers like Woodman's. For more information and recipes, visit hotchinmill.com. That's HODGSONMILL.com.
The number one key to healthy, productive plants are the roots. Starting from seed to full-grown plants, RootMaker.com has the answer. From seed starting trays with an innovative design that air prunes the roots, creating a fabulous root system, never again will you have root-bound plants, to multiple gallon grow bag sizes to raised beds. RootMaker.com has your grow needs covered. Visit RootMaker.com.
Do you have a little space to grow? Check out Greenstock Vertical Gardens at greenstockgarden.com. Greenstock is engineered to grow with its innovative space and water-saving design. You can grow vegetables, flowers, herbs, and even strawberries in just 2 square feet of space. Grow up instead of out. Perfect for the porch, patio, or deck. Grow up to 30 plants in a small space. Greenstockgarden.com has everything you need to grow in the littlest of spaces. Proudly made in the USA. For more information and to purchase, visit greenstockgarden.com.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Garden Radio Show with your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
It's the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. The WisconsinVegetableGardener.com is your destination for your gardening problems, questions, and all of that. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And breaking news, we have a guest this week. She called in. So we're moments away. But just a few minutes from probably your location is Bluemel's Landscape and Garden Center. We were there a couple of weeks ago. We'll be there September the 16th, about 10:30, for their 7th annual Fall Customer Appreciation Cook-Off. They're going to have food there. You can see all their fall festive stuff, the pumpkins, the gourds, all of that. And where can we find Bluemel's Landscape and Garden Center?
And now they have their fall stuff, kale, mums, asters, all that good stuff. So Bluemel's is at 4930 West Loomis Road in Greenfield. You can go to bluemels.com or call 414-282-4220. For more information.
Yeah, they're going to have all their stuff there. So hopefully we will see you there the 16th of September. That's a Saturday. So you can come out and enjoy a little activity in the fall time. So let's go to the IVOrganics.com hotline and bring in our next guest, Holly.
Rhonda Fleming Hayes is an author, garden writer, and passionate about pollinators. She currently resides in Minnesota. She's the author of a new pollinator book, Pollinator Friendly Gardening, Gardening for Bees, Butterflies, and Other Pollinators. And her website is thegardenbuzz.com. Welcome to the program, Rhonda.
Hi, Joey. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for taking time out of your day to join us on the program and share some of your garden knowledge with Holly, myself, and all of our listeners.
Great.
Well, I want to start out with people, for people who are not into gardening as much as you and Holly and myself are, what's the basic definition of a pollinator?
Well, a pollinator, they're usually insects, but they're any kind of animal that transfers, while they're going about eating, they transfer pollen from one flower to another, usually on their body, or their wings, their feathers. In this case, usually the bees, they carry it on their body from one flower to another. So it's the transfer of pollination, which, a transfer of pollen, which helps to fertilize the flower, and then we get fruits from that.
Okay. Are there bad pollinators, maybe insects that pollinate but cause other problems in the garden, and what do you do to control them?
Well, I think lots of cases there that bees are confused for wasps. I think a lot of people think that there's just this generic type insect, it's yellow and black, stripes like that. And they call it a bee, and in many cases it is a wasp. a wasp. And a wasp is a pollinator, but they're the more problematic in our gardens because of the possibility of stings. Wasps can sting more than once, and sometimes people accidentally will, you know, come upon a nest and disturb them, and the results are kind of awful. In my garden, I have a lot of paper wasps. And, in fact, they congregate in an area right by where we happen to have our patio and eat. But for the most part, they're in my vegetable garden all the time. I know that they're doing good things as well as kind of being a little threatening. For me, I just give them a wide berth. But I'm a common sense gardener, and I think, you know, if they're in a place where they're worrying you or there's traffic, pets, children, you're completely, you know, within your bounds to go ahead and treat for them. Sometimes it's good to call in a professional because they can be tricky to deal with. If you decide to do it yourself, make sure you read all the instructions and get a little advice on the internet about how to do that first.
Now, with those wasps, those paper wasps, correct me if I'm wrong, they are beneficial because they're eating insects, or what is their main diet that in the garden?
Well, wasps are actually carnivorous, and so they're not going for the same thing that bees are going for in many cases. But they do eat nectar and things like that also. Sometimes they go in and they're eating things like cabbage worms. So when I see them, you know, around my vegetable garden, I think, okay, cool. They don't seem to be very aggressive. I can work right alongside them usually, and nothing happens. The first time I've ever been stung was last year, and that was by a bumblebee.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing, because cabbage worms can be one of the nemesis of most vegetable garden growers. And
another thing, you know, when you have more insects in your garden, that's you have to kind of think about that as bird food, and birds are another great controller of pests like cabbage worms.
Absolutely. When it comes to plants that need pollen,
well, so there's a different number of bee species. Yep. Most people know of the honeybee. There's a species called the mason bee. What's the difference, and how do you know which is which?
Well, mason bees, you can definitely tell the difference because they're beautiful. They're a beautiful metallic shade of blue, sometimes green. The ones I see in my garden are blue. And they're called mason bees because they lay their eggs in little holes in the garden, maybe in a piece of wood where there's an old hole, like a beetle has drilled a hole in there, or in stems, things like that. And when they lay their eggs, after they have laid them in this little tubular spot, they seal it up with mud, and that's the reason why they call them a mason bee, kind of like, you know, bricks and mortar. But they're really cool in other ways because they're really gentle. And they're actually more efficient than honeybees. They're 100 times more efficient. And their pollination style is different. Instead of just kind of picking at things and flying back and forth like a honeybee, the mason bee kind of does what they call this kind of flop and wallow style of pollination. They kind of fling themselves into a blossom and wriggle around. And then they go back and forth between the blooms on the same plant. And this flopping style of the thing they do, they're kind of flinging pollen off, or, you know, as they just acquire more and fling it around, and it actually turns out to be more efficient than a honeybee. It's hard to explain.
Now, the honey, go ahead.
They're used commercially, or not used, but they're people do actually manage them. They don't live in hives. They live in, you know, they have blocks of wood with holes drilled in them, and they try to manage them in many cases in orchards because that's where they're the most efficient, for apples and plums, cherries, things like that.
Now, you can buy or create devices in which you can essentially attract the mason bee into your garden or backyard, right?
Yeah, you can do these. I think this year in the garden centers, I've seen tons of all these cute little bee houses, and those are the houses that are supposed to attract mason bees, and in other cases, they will also attract leaf cutter bees. And leaf cutter bees use little pieces of leaves to line their nest versus the mud that the mason bees use. But yeah, there's a lot of opportunities to make these little houses. And if you do put them in your garden, it's really important to have them either face east or just a little bit southeast, because when those little bee larvae develop and the baby bees come out, it's important that they come out into that gentle eastern sun, not a blazing western hot sun. And you will also, with those bee houses, maybe want to tilt them down just a little bit so water or rain doesn't collect in there and create fungus and other problems.
And I want to make clear that our listeners understand that the mason bee, they lay their larva and they seal up the hole, and the parents die, and this larva sets over winter and then emerges in the spring.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Unlike the traditional honeybee, which goes in the hive and hibernates and then comes out in the spring.
Well, you know, yeah. I mean, I guess it's just to make sure we're clear on that. Honeybees don't actually hibernate. They do go into their hive, but through the entire winter, they all take turns doing this kind of shivering behavior that keeps the center of the hive really warm, and they move back and forth and keep that at a constant temperature. So the bees don't get to rest, and the honeybees don't get to rest in the winter.
one of the hardest working insects that
are, I think, maybe the hardest working, yeah.
So when it comes to a plant that needs pollinating, how do we, what can we do now to get ready for spring? And it's not just flowers. There's shrubs, bushes, and trees that rely on pollinators as well.
Well, actually, it's kind of a back and forth thing. The pollinators are relying on those plants too. Spring is a really difficult time for a lot of pollinators because they're emerging. And let's take the bumblebee for example. They're one of the first to emerge. These young bumblebees come out, and they're obviously, you're hungry, you're looking for food. And food sources can be kind of scarce anywhere in the spring, but especially up here up north when it comes to our garden. I think that, you know, we have such erratic weather now, and we also, you know, we never can predict how long that snow load is going to be there. I think that spring is kind of a time when cold climate gardeners kind of sit it out. They don't want to invest a lot of money or energy towards something that they're not sure of. But we really do need to think about planting more spring-blooming plants because these pollinators really need them. One way we can do that is with ephemerals. Those are native plants that they only come out for a few weeks, but they do come out very early. Things like, bloodroot and trout lily, trillium, things like that. Those are great plants. And then some of those little spring blooming, what do we want to call them, more like garden type bulbs, scilla, that little blue flower that comes out, crocus, things like that. Those are really important in that early time when they're searching for food. And the most important thing is probably that the most prevalent food right at that point are dandelions. And if you can, try to spare a few dandelions at the edge of your yard or in a more unobtrusive place that we can see the bees.
And that's what we always tell people. Leave the dandelions alone, because the first thing, and you know people just like we do, the first time they see it, they run out and spray that chemical on them, and the bees get in it, and they take it back to the hive, and it ends poorly for everybody.
Everybody. I tend to think dandelions are pretty cheerful looking come spring.
So now you're in a similar climate like Wisconsin, and you've traveled a lot and lived in various places. What would you say was the biggest challenge regarding in Minnesota?
Well, that first winter, all that snow, I couldn't believe that it showed up in early November and didn't leave until April. Since then, I have a new strategy. I leave in the winter. But as far as my gardening, I think the biggest challenge is with the short growing season, it feels like when those first couple of weeks when you start going to the garden center, there's that it feels so frantic. You know, everything is so deep, it's so compressed at that one spot. You feel like, oh, if I don't do this, I'll never, that'll be it. I won't get my gardening done. So I think sometimes I get a little anxious and I plant things a little too soon. Or, you know, if I don't get things planted, I kind of beat myself up and think, oh, you know, you dummy, you're not going to get the garden now. I'm a little bit more relaxed about it. But the first couple of years here were, it was a real shift in my how I garden and my thinking.
There's a saying, I'd much rather plant my crop the first time with my neighbor than the second time with my neighbor.
Yeah, I heard that one.
Where can people find more information about you, Rhonda, and the fantastic book about all about pollinators and getting them in your garden?
Well, Well, you can read my columns in the Star Tribune, Minneapolis Star Tribune. I have a pollinator's column in Northern Gardener magazine also. As for my book, Pollinator's Friendly Gardening, it's available in bookstores, chain bookstores, independent bookstores. If you don't see it on the shelf, they'll be glad to order it for you. You can find it on Amazon. And, you know, any more information, The Garden Buzz is my blog. I will confess my blog's not as active as it should be, but my Facebook page, The Garden Buzz, you're welcome to go on Facebook and like that. And I tend to be a little bit better about keeping that one current. Feel free to follow me on Instagram. I do a lot of garden content on there. And that's just that, Rhonda Fleming Hayes. So lots of places to find me.
And you may not be that active on thegardenbuzz.com, but you've got hours and days worth of content that's very beneficial to everybody.
Lots of content and ways to contact me if you have a question. I speak at garden clubs and various things. My next appearance will be at the Minnesota Energy Fair on September 9th. I'll be doing a workshop there.
Well, Rhonda, we greatly appreciate you taking time out of your day to join Holly and myself and sharing a lot of your garden knowledge with all of us.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. And we'll be back right after this with your garden questions and our garden answers.
Have a gardening question? You can call into the ivorganic.com hotline at 414-444-5250 right now.
Beans and Barley Marketing Cafe, a neighborhood specialty grocery store for the east side of the greater Milwaukee area, where you can find all you need, from fresh produce to bakery to organic frozen dinners, from wine to fresh squeezed carrot juice, a health food store with hundreds of products, vitamins, supplements, bath and body items, magazines, cards, books, and a knowledgeable staff. Catering available, open daily at 8 a.m. The restaurant serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week with a menu of good, healthy, homemade food, including vegetarian and non-vegetarian specialties. 1901 East North Avenue, Milwaukee, 414-278-7878, and online at beansandbarley.com. Mycorrhizae is a beneficial fungus from plantsuccess.com that will greatly increase your plant's germination ability and a healthier root structure. You can increase seed sprouting, root growth, and general plant germination. Mycorrhizae can be used with hydroponics, root cutting, seed sprouting, coco coir, and soil. Plantsuccess.com carries powder, granule, and tablet forms of mycorrhizae. Increase the level of mycorrhizae in your soil for your plants to give them the optimal opportunity to produce an incredible harvest. For more information and to purchase, visit plantsuccess.com.
The River West Co-op Grocery and Cafe is proud to support the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener and a lot of other Wisconsin growers as well. The co-op offers a wide range of local and organic produce in their store and on their cafe menu, from apples to yogurt and everything in between. Open 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. weekdays, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. weekends at the corner of Clark and Frackney in Milwaukee's River West neighborhood. See what is in store and check out the co-op cafe. Cafe's delicious vegetarian menu at riverwestcoop.org.
Hi, I'm John Lewandowski, retail manager of Blue Mel's Garden and Landscape Center. Now, I'm not going to tell you about our awesome dome-grown plants, our beautiful pottery, or our 40 varieties of landscape materials. What I am going to tell you is that Blue Mel's is a local, independent, family-owned garden center that truly cares about your garden or landscape project. So if you're looking for that one garden center that actually cares about you, come to Blue Mel's Garden and Landscape Center. We've been treating our customers like family since 1955.
Blue Mel's, 4930 West Loomis Road, 414-282-4220.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Garden Radio Show.
Well, the show has been pretty strong.
But it can always be stronger. I just don't know how to make it that way.
I got it. We're going to add more cowbell.
Cowbell's always the answer.
Your host, Jolie and Holly Baird.
It's the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener on 860 AM WNOV and W2936 106.5. Some of you are getting that, others of you have no clue what that was referenced to. We are going to jump right into our questions. We do have a couple of callers on the ivyorganics.com 3-in-1 Plant Guard Hotline. Caller, you're on the air. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. I wanted to ask concerning the little yellow flowers that pops up over in your yard. Do you call those dandelions?
Yes, those are called dandelions. Those are the first emerging flowers of the spring.
And those are really good for the bees.
They're good for the bees, and we can also talk about that next year. There's a number of municipal properties in which are very
medicinal.
Yeah, there you go. That are very healthy for
you. Are you suggesting that we don't do anything, because I've been going to a Home Depot and getting poison and spraying them? So is that a good suggestion or not?
Well, they're good for the bees. So a lot of people, you know, they want to spray them because they don't like them in their yard. But they are good food. They're one of the first foods for the bees, for them to get their to pollinate with.
And many times when you spray them, the bees will go ahead and pollinate or get a hold of the pollen and take back to their hives and infect the hive with that toxicity that spray contains and disrupt the whole ecosystem of the bees and their lives.
What can I do then? Keep from harming the bees?
One thing you could do is you could dig them up. I know that's some work. Some people will spray vinegar around them as well. I mean, that's going to kill them, but at least it won't be harmful to the bees.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I listen every Saturday.
Well, thank you for listening.
I enjoy your program.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for the support, and thank you for listening. Let's go to line two, Ivy on the ivyorganics.com hotline caller. You're on the air. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I don't know if you answered this already, but I wanted to know, how long is the growing season in Milwaukee?
Typically, when we're talking from cool weather, from like the cauliflower and the cabbage and the broccoli and all that, all the way to the end, you're usually about March 15th to the first week in November is usually the gamut of time frame. Now, last year, in 2016, we were planting March 1st, and we were still harvesting the week before Thanksgiving.
But essentially, it's from mid-March to mid to end of October. We'll have to see. You know, we've had this cooler summer, so I don't know if that's going to mean a cooler fall. But if you're thinking it's over in September, it's certainly not. We definitely have a few more weeks after that.
Great. All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. And if you have a question on the Ivy or for us, you can call into the Ivy Organics 3-in-1 Plant Guard Hotline.
Ivy Organics 3-in-1 Plant Guard naturally protects plants against damaging sunburn, insects, and rodents, protects newly installed plants and trees, shields pruned and damaged surfaces for use on your roses, fruit, and nut trees, ornamental trees, and shrubs. This product is non-toxic, environmentally safe, and organic. For more information, you can visit ivyorganics.com. And again, that's 414-444-5250.
And you can also email us at twvgradio@gmail.com anytime with your garden questions, or you can just go to our website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, and you'll see the big question button there that you can submit a question to us as well. Well, we had a number of questions come in, and some of them were canning questions, Holly, and I'll ask you this. When we do talks and when we talk here on the program, Holly and I, we've done this a many of years, so we kind of overthink, you know, oh, everybody should know this, or everybody probably knows this. And we like it when people ask the questions that, and it informs us that maybe we need to be more descriptive. And one is, what is dry storage versus canning?
Right, and I didn't realize, I even say this, I mean, I grew up in the city, and we never dry storaged anything, and I learned this from Joey. So dry storage is basically, if you say you have something like rice, quinoa, barley, any type of grain, beans,
sugar,
anything that, I'm not talking about canned beans, I'm talking about whole
dry beans.
Like black beans or pinto or lentils or even split peas, whatever. It's when you store those things dry. Basically, we store ours in canning jars on a shelf out of direct sunlight, and we store them and we use them that way.
Now, you could just cut the bag open and then roll the bag up and then put a clip on it and put it in the cupboard.
But I also will buy these items in bulk from the local food, organic food store or co-op. So that's why I put them in jars, so I'm not keeping them in their little baggie.
Let's see, what else here? Whenever it comes to canning, there's certain things you can't can, but can you pre-cook some of these items, such as barley, and then can it after it's been cooked?
No, so any grains such as barley, rice, quinoa, anything like a wheat, a pasta, cannot be safely canned. So if you want to, say you cook a stew or a soup or something, and you're like, I want to add rice to it, you would cook that rice later, and then you would add it.
Okay. And you got a carrot question that came in.
Yeah, so from my friend Tom, we composted a ton then use a lot in the garden. This year, the area where I planted some carrots was a lot of compost, and it drained really fast, dried up really fast. The carrots did poorly compared to in a different raised bed with the same amount of compost, but there's broccoli and cauliflower. Do you know if it was just the veggies, too much compost? What was the problem?
Typically, when you compost, if you do the composting process correctly with the right amount of browns and greens, you're going to have a decent amount of nitrogen in that soil, which is good. Nitrogen is what makes the plants green. But if you're growing root crops such as carrots, that can too much nitrogen can affect the growth of the carrot and cause it to do uncharacteristical growth cycle things. And that can be a reason why your carrots did not do very well. You may have incredibly green tops, but very small roots or twisted roots or items like that. With the broccoli and cauliflower, those are essentially green plants, and with a minimal amount of fruit production, which would be the cauliflower head or the broccoli head, they love the nitrogen that you can provide. Now, again, we don't need 200% of nitrogen in the soil. There's a balance that you need to have, but that can be why your carrots didn't do very well and your broccoli and cauliflower did.
Right. So that makes sense. So another question is, okay, so this is another canning question. If most of the jar not under the lid is underwater during the
If most of the jar when you're water bath canning under the water but not the lid, because you know it's required you need 2 inches of water above the canning lid while submerged. But if most of the jar is under the water, is that good enough if it does the time procedure?
You want the jar, especially when you start the process, you want about 2 inches of water above the jar. It allows for the jar to be completely submerged and get that heat into the center of the jar.
No matter what, that's what you've got to do.
Right, definitely. Okay, so I want to plant garlic this fall in my container garden during the coldest months of winter, which is usually 10 degrees Fahrenheit, sometimes at or below zero. Is it okay to plant in the container? What if it's sitting on a table? Would it kind of ruin the garlic?
Well, we've always done garlic in the traditional ground. There are gardeners who do very successful garlic in a container. You can grow garlic in a container here in Wisconsin. You would want it to be on the ground because even though it's 10 degrees outside and there's 6 inches of snow, there is more heat in the container sitting on the ground than elevated on a table. You also want a large container. And also keep in mind you want to have good nutrient-rich soil, and that container with that garlic in it is literally going to be growing or in that container for about 9 months. So if at all possible, I would recommend growing the garlic in the ground, whether it's in a flower bed, along the edge of the driveway, somewhere, so you have minimal. In a container, you're going to have to keep it watered and all that stuff. If it's in the ground, you're virtually doing nothing for 9 months. There is a little maintenance, but overall, it's a carefree, forget vegetable that you can grow.
It's super easy to grow once you know how. And you can grow them in raised beds, too.
Yeah, raised beds, too. But containers, it is possible, but we want to try to make it easier for you than anything else. Well, this program, and we appreciate people calling in, asking garden questions, emailing us, Twitter, the whole deal, is made possible by great companies, and you can that you hear throughout the program. You can find all of them with their links under the radio tab on our website at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, and we appreciate you supporting them because they are supporting us just like.
Nacella Kombucha is the executive sponsor of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. Nacella is made in Wisconsin with local tea and natural herbs. Look for it in the refrigerator aisle at your local grocery. If you don't see it, ask for it because if it's not Nacella Kombucha, it's not kombucha. Find out more at nacella.com.
Programming note, as we just talked about garlic, we're going to talk about garlic next week on the program. What you need to know, what you need to get a hold of so you can plant whether your first batch of garlic you've ever grown or your 25th batch of garlic crop that you've ever grown. We're going to talk about that, as well as five of the most mistakes basic new canning individuals make, the five canning mistakes that most canners make, so you cannot make those mistakes, as well as Donna Blazer. She's an author, horticulturist, garden speaker, and she is theme is no guff gardening, techniques that make things simple in the garden. She will be with us next week. So until next week,
Holly Baird.
I'm Joey Baird, and we will see you in the garden.